Chapter 5. His review complete and standing orders issued, Rivas took a shade out of the hangar and headed west into the heart of Salvator. It was 2 hours before dusk, and the sky overhead was turning a deep, dark grey. All across the crowded cityscape, lamps were being lit, searchlights were going on, banks of neon were flickering into life. Diurnal watchcraft were returning to their claw berths, replaced by nocturnal duty shifts. Auto bells pealed in the many campaniles, just audible over the grind of the city's furnaces, its engines, its sirens. He didn't opt for the privileged air lanes, but mingled with the rest of the sluggish traffic. Just as always, they got out of his way smartly enough. Over on his right-hand side, a glut of crumbling HAB units blocked out the lowering sky. They had once seemingly been daubed with bright colours, but Terra's driving grit squalls had scoured most of that from the bare rockcrete, making them look like pocked and eroded cliff edges. On his left-hand side was the glowing shell of a refinery, its heart a throbbing red, barred by cooling towers that rose as high as the crowded pinnacles around them. Sparks from the open furnaces drifted across the columns of air traffic, swept up by the eddies of the roiling wind and thrown into spirals and plumes of twinkling illumination. Rivas watched them dance for a while, letting the shade's machine spirit guide him. The points of light were ephemeral, glowing brightly for a few scant moments before the dry gust turned them to ash flakes, ready to coat the levels below in another gauzy net of dust. Ahead of him rose the archaic cluster of a Ministorum Diocesan command chapel, a twisting, tortured mass of age-blackened iron and adamantium. Gargoyles and devils crowded its steep rooftops. Web-like buttresses flew tightly between ranked spires and turrets, piled atop one another in a maze of overlapping construction. 100 narrow stained-glass windows glowed weakly from the thousands of candles tendered within, while autocannon placements slowly rotated atop the spire pinnacles under the blind gaze of cowled stone saints. The place was a micro-city in its own right, with its own priests, its own gunships, its own servitors, and its own power generators. Pilgrims and supplicants processed in endless shuffling columns through its gaping portals, blared at constantly by hovering devotion drones. Every so often, an ecclesiarchy official would push his or her way through the masses, guarded by a phalanx of masked cathedral orderlies with electrostaves and crozius poles. Rivas took back full control and guided his transport towards a narrow landing pad set deep in one of the command chapel's less ostentatious districts. He ducked it under the shadow of an overhanging prayer tower and pulled it round, finally dropping onto the platform with a gout of yellowish steam. He disembarked, sealed the shade remotely, and followed a spiral stairway down inside the sprawling structure. Once within, he witnessed the usual activities in the naves, the congregation waddling past the high altars, servo skulls swarming up in the vaults with their sweeping red surveillance eyes, the wild cries of flagellants, and emperor-touched pilgrims prophesying the days of wrath. More worshippers were gathered into the precincts than he'd seen before, outside of the great feasts and festivals. They huddled there, like herd beasts clustering for warmth and shelter, while a storm gathered energy outside. Soon, though, he was moving down more tight-wound stairways, entering a labyrinth of older routes and danker passages. The air got stuffier, smelling of incense and rotting books. Candles as thick as his waist guttered in alcoves, dribbling tallow over heavy stone blocks. Tombs had been set back in long alcoves, each inscribed in various ancient dialects of Gothic, and given over to the memory of men and women who had once been powerful in their own parochial way, but were now almost entirely forgotten. Even the servo skulls didn't come this far down often, and the hum and shriek of the crowds gradually faded away. Eventually, he reached a side chapel, a tiny chamber carved out of mouldering black walls. More candles glimmered against damp stonework. A modest altar took up one end of the chamber, over which hung the faded banner of an Astra Militarum regiment, one of the thousands that carried the Emperor's vengeance to his enemies. Rivas had no idea how old the regiment was, where it was stationed, what deeds it had performed, or even if it still existed. Perhaps no one ever came here anymore. Or perhaps one day the regimental commanders would finally make the pilgrimage home again, replacing this standard with a more glorious one, and leaving a granite-carved record of their many and famous victories. Whatever the truth, A long time ago, someone had seen fit to hang the standard over the altar and mark it with the words Religio Nostra ad Sideris Aeterna, and leave a single lasgun, now cobwebbed and dusty, before the votive candle formation. Rivas took a seat on the hard metal pew. As he did so, the chamber's only other occupant shuffled a little further up.
"In his service," the man said. "For all ages," Rivas replied.
The two of them regarded the standard for a while. The man's eyes were milky, as if he were suffering from cataracts. His thin hands protruded from pale grey cuffs, and the faint smell of something gangrenous hung about his priestly robes.
"It has been a while, Captain," the man said, eventually.
"Always so much to do, Heinwolf," said Rivas. "How is your health?"
"I still serve. I wish only for the strength to do his work a little longer."
"As do we all."
"You have questions?"
Rivas nodded. The priest pulled a thumbed sheaf of parchment from his cloak and handed it over.
"Here are names your master will wish to study when he can. The usual sources, whispers in confession, the accusations of the desperate. Who knows? Some may even be guilty."
"And have you noticed a worsening?"
Heinwolf croaked a laugh.
"You feel it too?"
He turned to face Rivas, exposing a drawn, ash-white face under his cowl.
"Every night in this place, we have prophets telling us the end times are around the corner. I never believed them."
"And now?"
"They may have a point."
Rivas stowed the parchment.
"Inquisitor Kral wishes he could come in person," he said. "He is detained with matters of great importance, but wished me to convey his thanks for the work you do on our behalf."
"Kral is a good man."
"He has one particular query."
"Does he now?"
"You know the name Ido Gloch?"
Heinwolf coughed, a dry, cold ratchet.
"Quantrain's thug? Yes, I know the name."
"Gloch has information that would be of use to us," said Rivas. "For some reason, he is proving elusive. Has he been here?"
The priest shook his head.
"Not for a long time."
"Do you know of anyone who might know his whereabouts?"
"Your job, surely. If you can't keep up with your own kind, not much hope we can."
"Then, if you wish to help us further, keep an ear open. You know how to contact me if you need to."
Heinwolf pulled his robes tighter around his skinny frame. It was cold in the chapel, and the candle's smoky flames did little to change that.
"I could ask why, perhaps. I might be concerned if some feud between your agencies were to find its way down here."
"Nothing to worry about."
"See, now I am truly concerned."
Rivas got up, giving the altar a respectful nod as he did so. He admired the Militarum.
"I wish you strength for your sacred duties, Father," he said.
"There is someone you could try," said Heinwolf, looking up at him. "I have a contact out in the Mordant factories. She's reliable. Remember the organ gangs you broke up 3 years ago? That came from her. We used to talk a lot, but she's gone quiet. I'd investigate myself, but they keep me busy here."
Rivas hesitated.
"How is this related to Gloch?"
"She informs for him, too. She didn't want me to know it, but you know how these networks are. One person talks, another one hears. It gets around. Quantrain doesn't have much going on in Salvatore, so I think she's useful to him. If you're looking for him, you might want to look for her, too."
"A name?"
"Elia Rudecker. technician in the parchment works for the scribe houses. Good with a knife.
Rivas nodded.
My thanks. I'll look her up.
He walked over to the chapel's doorway.
You know what they're singing up there?
Heinwulf called after him.
Though night falls, my faith endures.
Rivas paused at the threshold.
And does it, father?
Heinwulf sniffed.
I don't know. Something's up, Captain. Maybe one thing's true, and the other isn't.
Rivas hesitated, wondering if that was a weak attempt at a jest, or something he should be concerned about. It was not unknown for a priest to fall into corruption, and yet Heinwulf looked destroyed already, hunched over in a forgotten chapel to a forgotten regiment. There were some weaknesses not worth worrying about.
Careful what you say, priest,
Rivas told him, walking back out into the dark.
Not everyone on Terra is as tolerant as me.
You had, of course, to forget. That had been Haldus Reveré's motto for a long time, and it had served him fairly well. So much of the business of survival on Terra was bound up with not knowing. Knowledge of any kind was terribly dangerous. To know that a man was a heretic, or that a woman was a trafficker in prohibited items, or that an official was taking bribes beyond a level tolerated by whoever had control over them, was to become complicit in their crimes, and thus a target. Perhaps that heretic or arms runner or official was not what they seemed, and you were merely becoming entangled into something more extensive, which was even worse. Some nets of confidence spread, like insect supercolonies, deep below and high above. It was better, all things considered, not to know. And if somehow, despite your efforts, you still knew, the next best thing was to forget. But also impossible in his profession, and so a middle ground had to be sought. He pushed his RE-4X Condor gun shuttle down through the grime, adjusting its descent against the perilous interspire thermals. The streets, what he could see of them amid the flying grey dust, were still strewn with the detritus from the long-ended Sanguinala. It would take weeks more before the last of it was gathered up by the gutter scavengers, scrabbling around for the cheap tatters of red ribbon and gauze and devotional pamphlets, none of which had any value except for the truly destitute or insanely religious. He wiped his forehead with the back of his hand, feeling greasy and tight. The air had been thicker, it seemed, ever since the end of the festivals. It wasn't just him who had noticed. Enyi, in the next scribe chamber along, had complained of it so much she'd been given a sanction by the section commander. The watch officers were grumbling, he'd been told, about unrest boiling over in places where you wouldn't expect it. They didn't like it when it got truly hot. Frayed tempers and failing air processors made it harder to keep a lid on things. If Reveré had been interested, he might have inquired a bit further about what was going on. But he wasn't, and so he didn't. You had to forget. The platform below, an octagon of dark metal swimming up from the gloom, beckoned him down with a flurry of blinking lumens. Gaudy signage snapped on and off around it, below it, above it. Most of that was religious in nature, some security-related, and a smattering was commercial. Galaganda was not a rich district, despite being in such close proximity to the Hall of Judgment. The kind of thing Reveré was after didn't exist so obviously in rich districts. For all that human society had evolved, some things never changed, no matter the heat, the cold, the age, or the season. The Condor was a standard transport for an official of his station, and had capacity for four passengers besides the pilot. Normally there would have been another official with him and two bodyguards drawn from the Enforcer's close protection carders, but not tonight. That was a risk, given the location, but then everything was a risk. Terra was not a safe world, not even in the highest fragrance domes of the highest spires, and you couldn't be overlooked all the time. He touched down with a flex of landing spurs. The Condor whined down to cold, and the main access hatch cantilevered open. Reveré unbuckled his restraints and emerged into the open, adjusting the grit filters over his mouth and nostrils and pulling his plasfiber robes tighter around him. The dull roar of traffic made the air above him thrum. Menials were already hurrying to secure the gun shuttle, but he ignored them, striding to the edge of the platform where the elevators stood. In every direction, the mighty spines of the hive towers reared up, filling the sky, glittering like dark mountains limned with lurid spots of yellow. The usual cacophony punched through the background roar. Tinny vox burst from state-authorized commerce outlets, cries from the clogged pedestrian piers, the snarl and skid of ground cars hemmed into their swirling transit spans. A guard was waiting for him at the elevator entrance, a skinny figure in a battered carapace breastplate, carrying an old electro-lance. Revray presented his credentials, then waited for them to be verified on a clunking pattern reader. After the all-clear, he got into the descent cage, and the locks slammed back. A moment later, and he was clattering down the shaft, holding on to the main roll bar to keep his feet. The roar of the exterior disappeared, along with the hot breeze and the stink of engine oils. He saw the flicker pattern of the hab levels rolling past, just glimpses into worlds he would never visit. They were all much the same, dirty flares of underpowered lighting and long, filth-packed corridors receding into the dark. The cage hit its destination level, and he disembarked. This was a long way down, far enough that the reek of engine oils had been replaced by earthier aromas, mould, damp, rust, human sweat. A long corridor ran off ahead, and he walked casually down it. At the end, lit by a painfully strobing neon tube, was a hatch. By the hatch was a locked door with no signage. Inside the hatch was a woman with an ironwork grill riveted over her eyes and long painted fingernails.
"Sir Clenda,"
she said, nodding at him.
"How are you today?"
"Fine," said Revray, handing over his ident wafer and placing his finger up to the blood check needle.
"Busy, are you?"
the woman asked idly, running the wafer through an old verifier unit.
"You know, we are,"
said Revray, leaning against the doorframe.
"It's becoming unhinged. Something's in the water."
"Cholera,"
said the woman, humorlessly. She handed the wafer back.
"That's all fine, sir. I wish you much pleasure."
Revray put the wafer back in his wallet and pushed the door open. As he did so, the familiar smell of the place wafted over him, blotting out the urine tang of the corridor. He unclipped his nostril filters and breathed it in. "Thanks. Time to forget." The space inside was as scratchily plush as the space outside was grimy. A crimson carpet, frayed at the edges, ran down a narrow walkway. A few dozen doors, all locked, were set into the walls on either side. Some dog-eared Picts had been stapled up, images of paradise worlds, or heroes of the militarum in dress uniforms. One of them had been scribbled over and defaced, and no one had done anything about it. Black spiderwebs of fungus radiated out from the wall's edges, glistening faintly. He reached his usual cubicle and used the ident wafer to gain entry. The space was very small, 3 meters square, with a single armchair and table. Revray could see the incense steam tumbling softly through the air filters, so pungent it made his eyes water. He took off his facial gear and massaged his jawline. He took off his overcoat and his jacket, then rolled up his left sleeve. On the table was a vial and a needle and a tube. He connected them up, sat down, and took a breath. He knew this room almost better than his own hab chamber. He'd stared at these faded pink walls for hours, though much of that time was lost to the blur of memory loss. It was a comforting space. Its size made you feel safely enclosed, locked away, cut off from the limitless sprawl above and beyond. What he had told the woman at the doorway was right. His labours had been getting crazy, and it was making him jumpy. The enforcers were always run ragged, chasing 100 different insurrections across a dozen urban sectors. But it had felt like it was getting out of control for some time now. Keeping order on Terra was essentially a confidence trick. If the masses ever truly realized what power they had in their vast numbers and somehow coordinated, they would be virtually unstoppable. You had to keep them afraid, keep them busy, keep them looking at their feet and their neighbours rather than up at the smog banks and gun drones. Revray sighed. These were not good thoughts to have. He had to break the cycle, get back to thinking more positively. He popped the lid on the vial, connected the tube, and slipped the needle into a vein. Then he sat back and waited for the contents to do their work. Almost immediately, the boundaries of the chamber grew fuzzy. The ceiling appeared to recede, the floor to drop away. The sense of gravity, of confinement and weight that was always present on Terra, lifted. He smiled and sat back in the armchair. Soon he wouldn't remember anything of the last 12-hour shift. For just a short time, it would all be gone, washed away by the soft blur of this agreeable poison. He closed his eyes for just a moment. When he opened them again, he was no longer alone. Revray sat up sharply, his free hand scrabbling for his service sidearm. A man, one of the two figures who stood opposite him, reached down to prevent him. The other figure, a woman, remained where she was. "Haldus Revray," she said. He tried to focus. She was wearing nondescript clothing, the kind of thing everyone wore down here. Her companion was the same, but his grip was incredibly strong. How did she know his name? His heart began to pound.
"What do you want?"
he slurred. "Haldus Revray, Scribe Primus in Hall Processing Silo 12C. Confirm quickly. The longer you wait, the worse it will get for you." He blinked twice, trying to clear his head.
"No," he mumbled. "Left Clender, machine operative."
The woman leaned over him. She held a little bottle in her right hand. He couldn't see her face clearly, but she was powerfully built and looked capable of hurting him badly. "You'll need this soon," she said. "It's the only antidote to the filth you've put in your veins. Talk to me and you can have it. Don't talk and I'll keep it here." Revray frowned. He was feeling groggier than usual.
"What are you talking?"
"You normally take 5 quints, she said. "There are 50 quints in that vial. You know what that means. Unless you wish to spend your last hour vomiting your own stomach up, stop lying and start talking." His eyes went wide. He suddenly felt the rush and knew she was telling the truth. He tried to reach out and grab the bottle, but the man kept him clamped in place.
"Holy throne!" he blurted. "Why would you..."
"You are a servant of the Adeptus Terror," the woman said emotionlessly. "By polluting your body and mind, you have already earned the death that now comes swiftly for you. You have one chance to redeem yourself. Take it. You are Haldus Revray." He started to sweat. The cramps would begin soon. A cold terror rose up with his stomach and threatened to close like a vice around his throat.
"Yes,"
he said, unable to take his eyes off the bottle. He needed it. He needed it quickly. "I require the location of all records of investigations pertaining to the orbital quarantine enacted prior to Sanguinala. You understand me? The communication between the Hall of Judgment and the Speaker's representatives." Revray stiffened.
I cannot give you that," he stammered,
wriggling in the other man's heavy grip. "Then you will die here." Revray started to cry.
"They'll... no,"
he started. "That is a risk, no worse than the one you took coming here." The room began to sway. He felt his heart rate start to accelerate.
"I cannot."
"You are running out of time, Haldus Revray."
"All 26,
he gasped.
"Level 4, 5, 8. They're sealed, though."
"You have an ident wafer and a blood sample. Will that be sufficient?"
"Yes, yes, if you get that far."
His head was swimming now. It felt like insects were crawling through his innards. He could scarcely feel the man drawing the ampule of blood, nor the ident wafer being taken from his pocket.
"There are security cordons."
The woman handed him a data storage slug. "You know the codes. Input them here." He looked up at her.
"All of them?"
"All of them." The man released him to work. His own fingers had got fatter, it seemed. His mind was following them, turning to mush and making it hard to think. Somehow he managed to punch them out, the ones he could still recall. Then he added a final one. He tried to hand the slug back, but the woman folded her arms. "Outer zone access codes, all the way in. Work faster." He went as fast as he could. He could feel his core temperature rising fast, and the nausea beginning, and the numbness that rose from his feet and would climb steadily through his muscles until the real pain started. His hands shaking badly now, he handed the slug back. The two figures before him had morphed into four, overlapping and spiralling.
"Please,"
he said, reaching out for the bottle. The woman tucked the slug into her jerkin and instructed her accomplice to check the door. Then she turned towards him and handed him the bottle.
"It won't help," she said, her voice cold with contempt. "Your sins have found you out, scribe."
Reveret pulled the lid off, and cold water spilled onto his hands. For a moment, he just looked at it, appalled, watching it drip through his shaking fingers. The woman walked calmly away, following her companion through the door.
"But you still have your sidearm," she told him, pulling the heavy panel closed behind her. "In what time remains to you, I suggest you locate it."
Frantically, Haldus Reveret started to rummage in his tunic, shivering and sweltering. As he slipped to the floor, still scrabbling, the door closed with an echoing clang, sealing him in. The world began to shrink around him, terrifyingly fast. Spinoza strode swiftly along the perfume-drenched corridor. Hegain came with her, studying the data slug carefully.
"How does it look?" she asked.
Hegain glanced up at her.
"Yes, very much what is required, I think so," he reported.
For once, he seemed somewhat lost for words.
"Unpleasant work, Sergeant," said Spinoza, reaching the main entrance. "But necessary. Time is short."
"Absolutely," Hegain agreed. "Of course, you have the right of it."
They passed through the main portal. There was no sign of the woman at the hatch, nor of the guards who had been there earlier.
"Retrieve the shade," Spinoza said, her mind already on what came next. "He'll be missed soon enough. We'll need to strike within the hour."
From behind them, a dull crack rang out. A revolver discharged in a confined space.
"As you will it, Lord,"
Hegain said, his expression blank, stowing the data slug and calling up the transport on his helm's tactical readout.
"Of all things, it shall be done."